Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Road team wins game one of the Stanley Cup Final. No surprise there. Welcome in. We are inside our Sabres Live studios in KeyBank Center, downtown Buffalo. Combine is rolling on this week in advance of the draft that will be held, of course, here in Buffalo on the 26th and 27th of this month. 5-4 the score last night. Vegas over Carolina with Marty. I'm Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great. What a game one last night it was. Vegas now moves to 7-2 on the road for the playoffs. Carolina 6-2 at home. Carolina still hasn't lost on the road, but they won't get to test that until game three when it shifts to Vegas. But it was a back and forth thing. And man, like these early goals in games, we experienced that in the Montreal series, Buffalo, Montreal, early goals in games. We saw that in the Montreal Carolina series. Now we're seeing it again last night, not just in the first, but in the second and in the third period. So if you were late to your seat or to your couch or to anything, you missed a lot.
Did you, though?
I was right there watching.
Because I think the beauty is you don't really miss that much because something else is about to happen.
Well,
and
you have to catch up.
Well, maybe, or you just continue to let it play out. This was a remarkable beginning for Nick Ehlers, which is a continuation of the beginning of his time in Carolina.
Yeah.
And again, the first couple of months were troublesome for Nick from a goal-scoring standpoint. But he became exactly what the Hurricanes expected when they signed him, and their balance, led by Ehlers to a certain extent, was very much on display early in this game. What it turned into, apparently, was the first ever multi-goal comeback by a road team in game one of the Stanley Cup Final, and yeah. Vegas is full marks for it and winning 5-4 thanks to Hurdle in the third.
So you've heard the numbers, right? Like winner of game one of a best of seven.
You know,
wins
when I
about
saw
70%.
That last night, I was like, how about you just show us the last 10 years and give us recent history? Because so much of this nonsense, and it's nonsense now because it's irrelevant now. But if you're
especially with the way the road team
right,
has won
if
this
you're
year.
Talking about like, you know, current day salary cap teams, the era, like let's focus on the era as opposed to 100 and something years.
I think that's a very valid point. Here's the other point is that they were like, well, when the home team wins game one, it's about 85%. When the road team wins game one, it's 55%. Well, why? Because the home team game one is the better team. Mm-hmm. So if they lose, they come back better. Or if they win, they settle it in. But
now nobody really says they're better, they're better, they're better.
Because even Carolina, Vegas, a team that had so much more in Carolina and Vegas so much less. You're like, well, these teams are very, very similar. And you saw it last game in the way that it was. Take a 2-0 lead, boom, come back, take a 3-2 lead, get it, you know, tied again with the stall goal. I'll say this, and even individually, I've got to look at my notes because I was taking notes during the game instead of writing them down, but the Eichel line had a terrible first period. But you know what? They're the one that got the second period going for them.
They also should have had two or three more goals for sure based on
the post.
Just mishandled by Jack down low and a great scoring opportunity. Yeah, but
sad. But it was funny how – so I talked about a key to the series was going to be the Eichel line stopping the Stankoven line. But in Carolina, Rod Brind'Amour – wants Jordan Staal against the Eichel line. And in the first period, it showed because the Eichel line turned the puck over so many times. They weren't ready to handle the pressure and, you know, the quickness of Carolina. And then in the commercial break, Tortorella is basically yelling at everybody, telling them, you know, stop turning the puck over. And then you saw a difference. And that was Montreal's problem against Carolina. Mm-hmm. That was Philly's problem against Carolina, turning the puck over and allowing Carolina to play their game. Well, it's easier said than done. When you're on the ice, you have the puck and you have the pressure. You panic sometimes, you panic Perot, and then you get the puck out.
It ends up being a pretty even game, which you would hope when the score reads 5-4, and with the amount of flip-flopping in the score and lead changes and things like that, the shot attempts were pretty close. Really, across the board, the chances were pretty close, especially at 5-on-5. And both teams missed out on some glorious power play opportunities in the third period, and yet it still came down to Hurdle with his fourth of the postseason with just under 4 minutes to go.
With that goal, you know what I figured, Duffer? That Hurdle goal. Mm-hmm. And you know how Montreal was playing this man-on-man defensive zone coverage?
Yeah.
Carolina does a lot of the same thing.
And it hurt them in that situation, yes.
But how many times the Sabres, let's say you and I do a scissor play, a cycle play. Mm-hmm. I give it to you. You've got your man beaten, but it's like you're taking a shot from 30 feet out on what was Dobesh back then and making it
look
good.
This was a funny play, though, because Hurdle missed Sissons going into the zone, and then the two conspire for this incredible effort, and it's a great pass and an even better shot.
But the key to this is once Hurdle made the play to Sissons, he rushes to an open spot. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look like – I feel like what the Sabres did, what Montreal did a lot against Carolina and what Sabres did against Montreal, is when once I got it to you – I watched you beat your man, but I didn't beat my man.
Right.
I didn't get open for you. Yeah. So it became easy for Dobesh to make that save, or it has become easy for Freddie Anderson to make the save.
Yeah.
But then Hurdle beats his man, and there's a quick pass, and now it becomes hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's why working away from the puck is as important as working when you have the puck.
You know why I'm scrunching my face right now?
Don't know.
Because of the failed Thompson-Benson play in overtime.
The 2-on-1? Yes.
And because of how you just described it, I was rewatching it and looking at possible scenarios for that play.
Yeah.
And one of them, of course, is, okay, well, what if Tage, upon gaining control, makes the pass quickly to Benson?
Early pass.
And then I was thinking, okay, but you still have to give Dobesh the opportunity to make a spectacular save. And all I was thinking about was, as long as Tage gets himself to a position for a rebound, there's a very good chance that even if somehow Benson doesn't deposit this, it's going to come back out the other way from where Tage should be coming. And you're so that,
game one, when Hudson falls on the wall and Benson gets the puck, he freezes Dobesh, goes to Doan back door.
Yeah.
Why? Because Doan worked hard to get open.
Yeah.
And that was the big difference here.
Yeah.
And you're right.
Or
you shoot the puck like Ehlers started the game 2-on-1. He's not looking to make a play.
Right.
He's like, I'm just going to shoot the puck, and boom, it goes in.
And the cruel reality of it is Gostisbehere ends up being the one diving at the last minute to try to thwart Hurdle from scoring the eventual game winner, right on the heels of Gostisbehere himself having scored the tying goal to get the place into a frenzy once again. And that's, so I think the game, from that standpoint, had an awful lot of drama. Did you think it was an accidental block by Marner at the end?
Absolutely. Accidental block. And it was tagged for inside the post. Now, I don't know if Carter Hart would have made the save. He had his blocker going in that direction. But there was an angle of 6 seconds left. Rod Brind'Amour looks over to the bank to Nikishin, and he goes, you're going on the ice, because he's the left-handed shot for the one-timer. Jordan Staal was winning those draws. And there's a science to winning draws. When you're in the offensive zone, the offensive center gets to put his stick second.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan Staal kept waiting an extra second, almost like a car race start where you're anticipating the light to go on, but you wait, and Staal would put a stick down at the very last minute and wins it. Stanko over to Nikishin, one-timer. I love how Marner fought to get out from his, he was being picked.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just say, I'm being picked, I'm done.
Yep.
Fight to get maybe in the shot lane, and when he saw the one-timer come in, he's like, oh crap, like, I kind of don't want this to hit me. So he jumps and makes the blocks, which was incredible.
Not to quibble over it, because it ended up going exactly how Carolina would have liked, win the draw, move it over.
Yeah.
But did you find that if Nikishin did anything wrong, he drifted out as opposed to go? Like, I was looking going, it almost looks like he could have taken a lot more of that high slot closer to the hash mark and still, because he was so wide open, could have got a pass down there. And again, these are really, really, really minor
also,
things, but, you know.
This is like for anybody, and you watch the Sabres, and maybe at the end of the game you say, oh, Dahlin is set up for the one-timer, right? Set up closer to your defenseman, mm-hmm. partner, mm-hmm. because as you're going to take the one-timer, your natural way of taking a one-timer is by backing out.
Right.
You can't take a one-timer skating in or standing still. You have to have the backward motion.
Yeah.
But the backward motion takes you from...
if you're Nikishin, and then that way you haven't backed
out
as far. Let's
say you have point A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. You want to shoot for point B. Don't start at point B because you're going to drift to point C. Mm-hmm. Start at point A, drift to point B, get it from there. That was the one thing right there.
Love it.
That was a big difference. You know what was the thing? An adjustments that Vegas did? They had a line of Dorfiev, Eichel, Barbashev.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the game, Stone was on the ice and with Eichel and Barbashev.
Mm-hmm.
Eichel, Barbashev change.
Yep.
Stone stayed on the ice. Like John Tortorella keeping Stone on the ice a long time.
Who was the most celebratory Vegas Golden Knight after that shot block? Look at the replay again. It's hilarious. Mark Stone's like, great block.
And even Hurdle after the game, having an interview, talking about big block by Mitchie right away. Like, they all knew that it was Marner. But, yes, it was Marner to block and the Stone celebration. He chases him. He's like, yeah, way to go.
And McNabb was over the top as well, excited. Yeah. And what a game for him and Theodore. Yeah, the Sabres have fallen to third now in the postseason in points by defensemen.
Yes.
They ended up 1 point behind Montreal. Vegas roared to the top last night after an incredible game from Theodore and McNabb.
Oh, Theodore.
6 points between them.
His one goal goes off Eric Robinson's leg.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, okay, that got Vegas back in, because if you're down 2-0 after the first, I'm not saying it's over, because that game, obviously, if you watched it, there was going to be some goals being scored. I thought it was going to be a low-scoring affair. And now this is the second time that the first game of a series, Freddie Anderson gives up five. He gave up five to Montreal in a 6-2 loss, mm-hmm. empty net goal, gave up five again yesterday. Not going to blame him. I think Carolina is going to have one of those video session again with Rod Brind'Amour, a mental practice, getting ready for game two, because I feel like in their zone, they gave up more to Vegas than they did probably all series long against Montreal.
But still not a super, super, super high number. I mean, again, that's where I speak to how even, you know, overall across the board it was, and very reflective of a 5-4 game. We'll see.
Timeout by Carolina after a Vegas icing yesterday with a minute left. That was a weird one. So you know that Vegas iced the puck.
Yeah.
They had
Theodore going for the empty net.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they had been on the ice for about a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And now Vegas can't call a timeout to rest their guys, and they can't change.
Mm-hmm.
And Rod Brind'Amour decides to call a timeout right there to maybe rest his player going. I
feel that's normal. I feel it's on the greater percentage of normal. Like, if I would say it happens 60-70%.
So you're
of the
saying
time.
Like, use your timeout for your own benefit.
Yeah,
don't worry about the other team.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that. I've just felt like I wish I would have put Vegas under a little bit more stress there and say, you know what? You're tired. You're going to have to defend maybe another 20, 30 seconds. Then we'll take a timeout and be able to reuse our guys later.
Yeah.
That was a weird one for me. When I wrote down my things, I was like, oh. Because it was funny, too, because I was watching, and it's a, you know, timeout is taken. And they weren't put, usually you put timeout next to the Vegas mm-hmm. or timeout next to Carolina to tell you which team called the timeout. And they didn't put it up there on the screen. And I'm like, they don't know who called the timeout.
Right.
Well, there's only one team that can call the timeout in this situation. It's Carolina. So it's
obvious.
Don't
get me started.
I know.
There were some things that bothered me.
Yes.
Watching the game last night, and they're more technical and broadcast related. But this or that,
mm-hmm.
will Freddie Anderson be playing for Team World at the All-Star game?
Oh. Yes, okay.
The 2027 All-Star Game is going to have a new format on the island in early February. It's based on the heels of, obviously, the international success that the NHL has certainly found with the Four Nations and participation in the Olympics. So we're going to see Canada, U.S., Sweden, Finland, and a world team competing in the All-Star.
I don't know if Konsta Helenius is going to play for Finland. That would be a great question.
Obviously.
With Barkov. Barkov is going to say, want him.
He might There's be one of the million, young stars in the skills competition.
$2 million on the line for the winning team. Barkov is going to say, I want Helenius on my team. I do like the format. This is interesting because this is the longest running All-Star game in the history of the NHL because it was supposed to be in Long Island, and then they decided not to have it. And then there was the send-off to the Olympics, and then they just been pushing it back a year after a year after a year. So,
well, the longest-running thing in the history of the NHL was the prolonging of the Arizona franchise.
Yes, that was...
I think, wrong. Let's be honest, through many ownerships and many promises, hey, we'll do this in Arizona if we just can get there.
We will build a rink. And before that, it was the longest-running thing in the NHL was the new building in Long Island, which they finally got because that Lighthouse Project.
That's where the All-Star Game is.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. I like the format. I like
and
what
I do
they're
miss the
do.
Lighthouse Project. I thought it was a great idea.
I thought it was a great idea, yeah. too. Yeah. It was right there where... Well, the Coliseum was, and Marriott was, and everything.
We got Jeff Merrick coming up. It's going to be great, so stay tuned for that. Nashville made a big change yesterday, but so too did Colorado, because they allowed their general manager to leave and take on that role and more with the Predators, as Chris McFarland is the new guy there. What's your initial thought for each or just one of those two teams involved?
My initial thought is this is a weird situation. Obviously, Chris McFarland gets president of hockey operation and general manager because... In the NHL, you don't make lateral moves. You don't go from being the GM, still under contract, to being a GM somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, but you can move for a bigger position, and that's why they give him president of hockey operation. And Joe Sakic now assuming GM's responsibility in Colorado.
Again.
I just feel like, and Bednar is going to stay, they just said.
For now. Final year of his contract, so unless an extension happens, it just becomes a talking point.
Well, there's a talking point there. There's a talking point in Montreal with Marty St. Louis entering his final year of his contract as well. There's a lot of talking point with coaches and Bruce Cassidy and whatever that happens with
Darren Dreger on tomorrow, by the way. We'll dive in on all of that, of course.
We'll talk about all of that. Yep. But anyway, my big point is that was a weird situation. Joe Sakic had been watching... McFarland do a good job in Colorado, but I feel like he's probably saying, I want to take the reins again. So I'm going to let you go. I'm going to take him until I feel like I've got the right person. I just thought McFarland's fit in Colorado to me was a weird one. And I think it's a better fit in Nashville, but I think Sakic's saying, I want to take the reins now. That's the way I see it.
Post-trade deadline fallout when your team does not scale the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Especially that way, sweep in the conference final.
It doesn't matter whether it's a sweep or seven, you weren't getting the draft picks back, and nor does Colorado technically need them, even though they are aging. Yes. But what Joe Sakic, and whether it was Joe all along, or whether it's Joe and Chris, which it obviously is Joe and Chris, that's why McFarland gets a new job, because of his ability.
And that's why
and
he
what
was
he's
voted
done.
As a
But over
three
the next
GMs.
3 years... The next 3 years, Colorado has 1 second and 1/3.
Yeah.
That's it. Out of the 9 possible picks.
Yeah.
At the start of the draft.
In the top three rounds.
Out of the 9 possible picks to start each of the next 3 drafts, Colorado has 2, a second rounder and a third rounder.
They're probably not even here at the combine. And they're like, who cares? We none of these guys will be available.
It's just, and again, I don't fault, like, obviously, if you have those pieces and you already won a cup, your goal is to maximize the window of winning, right?
Well, just like Vegas and Pittsburgh did for years
in Tampa
and Florida.
Now all the talk is, especially in the heels of Kadri not necessarily having the impact and him being under contract for so long, is that they have an aging core that is also going to feature a potential Makar doubling of salary into his next deal.
Doubling?
9 to 18. It's possible.
I was going to say, very, very guaranteeing this $17, $18 million dollar cap hit for Kale Makar moving forward.
It's possible. I don't know how real it is, but I think it's possible. I think anything is possible after what we saw over the past year. And
do you think that comes in on July 1? Do you think that's like we got to sign him right away, or do you let him play it out? I mean, it's funny, we haven't talked about Alex Tuck here in Buffalo for a while now, and it's like, what's going on there, right? And it's slow, and I'm thinking, well, if it hasn't been announced, it's probably just going to go by the month of June, and July will come, and they'll focus on Benson, they'll focus on other players, and they'll let that run. You don't want to let a Benson guy go into camp and the season without an extension. You don't want to let a McCarr guy go into the season without an extension.
I feel like things turned poorly for the Avs. I want to say during game three, maybe it was
3-0.
No, must have been game two because they had home ice, right? Colorado. Yes. Must have been game two. ESPN broadcast late in the game. Joe Sakic is somewhat irritated, animated in the booth. They show him and the title, Joe Sakic, 1996 Stanley Cup winner with Avs. And I'm like,
there's multiple.
The Conn Smythe in 96. He also won in 2001, and he's the only person in the organization to win three by doing it as the GM, captain and the GM.
Yes.
So I felt like there was a little meat
missing.
Left.
There's a lot of missing information on that one. He's the one that gave it to Ray Bourque after, in 2001. The game was great. But that video of the waiting game, like the Ray Bourque thing and how it all, is playoff failures. The Sabres were in there a couple of times. We saw James Patrick shake hands with Ray Bourque after the 99 finals, so that was cool.
Jeff Merrick, straight ahead here on Sabres Live. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Rolling along here with old friend Jeff Merrick.
Hello.
It is great to have you in studio, my friend. Daily Face-Off host, of course, but also previous host of seemingly everything.
Oh,
How are you?
I'm well, yeah. It's always good to be on set with goalies. Or goalers, as we like to say.
No, Duffer's a goalie. Guys. He's a right-catching goalie, though.
I know.
He's the other way.
So. I could never. We used to play at Lakeshore Lions Arena Friday nights when you were at Leafs TV, and I could never score on him. Mm. I could never score on a right-catching goalie.
Did you have the Grand Fuhr gear?
He was ahead. No.
No, he wore this Nashville Predators bright yellow jersey.
It was the mustard one.
Drove me to distraction. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jeff was, and his closest friends were way ahead of the curve when it came to shots between the legs and all kinds of stuff like that.
Skill stuff,
before it ever emerged in the NHL, these guys were torching me with it.
And I was good in warm-up. I was really good in warm-up. The TSN turning point was in the puck drop for the game. I was a pretty fierce warm-up.
Yeah, be careful because Duthie's going to want some money for using TSN turning point on this show. So, yes.
Fair enough, yes.
What'd you think of game one?
I thought it was a banger of a game. I think both coaches hated it, but I think the game itself was fun, full value. Ehlers scores a couple of goals, and the crowd is hot, and then we got, dueling tie scores, 2-2, 3-3, 4-4, like everything that you want outside of the home team going home happy and the home fans going home happy, you got in that game. I thought it was a great way to start the Stanley Cup playoffs. I loved every minute of it.
There was
action every minute. It was great.
I want more Tortorella mic'd up because, I have lived it in the room and on the bench. But when it's positive and they were down 3-0 to Colorado. They came back like they're down 2-0, and I'm watching the game. I'm like, stop turning the puck over. Stop going across the ice. And he says, we can't do the East-West stuff. Keep playing. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Like, I just want a picture-in-picture with Tortorella mic'd up on my screen all the time.
I'll tell you. I understand why they mic up players, obviously, but I'm kind of turning the page on the here we go, boy.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Let's go, boys. That's what you get, right? Give me coaches and give me officials mic'd up.
Yes.
The officials mic'd up are the most, because they'll have like actual conversations that are interesting. Right?
Mic up the GMs in the press box.
Oh, all right. We're peeling back a layer here that we only wish has been exposed more to the fans of the game. We've been privy to seeing what the NHL produces behind the scenes as teaching tools.
Yes.
For officials, for broadcasters, for people who cover the game. We have seen, privately, some incredible player-official interactions on the ice.
Fantastic.
I have always believed this is what would resonate most with fans.
Totally.
You would understand what it's like in the heat of the moment to explain your call, explain yourself, how you try to keep the temperature of a game.
Had a really interesting conversation, I'm glad you brought this up, Duffer, with Dave Jackson about this. And we're having a conversation. He does great work on ESPN. And I love it because he goes into Thunderdome. Dave does. Like, he goes online to defend officials. Like, he's like, he is not preaching on campus to the converted. He's going into Thunderdome where it's like you hurl grenades. So and we're having a conversation about ticky-tack penalties. And I was like, oh, the fans hate it. Everybody hates it. The teams hate it. He goes, I understand that, and we don't like calling them. But what you don't see and you don't hear are the three times we didn't call a ticky-tack penalty on a certain player and have let them know one more and you're getting called. Mm-hmm. All that fans see is the one call, and we go, oh, you got to be kidding me. But what you don't see is the conversation leading up to it. Duffer, I'm with you 1,000,000%. If we knew the conversation leading up to it or the three warnings that that player has gotten before the quote-unquote ticky-tack call, I think it would open fans' eyes up brightly as to how this game is controlled.
The only thing I didn't like about last night's game, and I still don't like it, and I'm like, man, why did they start? It's the Chris Rooney, head official, the welcome to the Stanley Cup Finals speech before the game. I'm like, I know Chris Rooney. I remember when he was a rookie official in the league. And I'm like, this is a great guy, great conversation. You know, back in the days when the Carey Fraser and Koharski and those guys, like, it was awesome. But when it's kind of planned and scripted, it doesn't. I hated that. I'm like, oh, they starting with this again? I hope that's a one and done.
I know they're trying to make it a tradition. You have to be someone that's really comfortable on the mic to do it. I know more is expected. Officials explaining their calls and announcing their calls. I love it. I know I know it's going to be hit and miss. Mm-hmm. I know sometimes it's going to be like if it's Wes McCauley, you know it's going to be a banger because that's Wes and he understands the show business of it all. And I know they do want to do more with officials. I'm a proponent of putting the names back on the sweaters.
Yes.
To begin with, that happened after the strike, and that was one of the punishments, I suppose, for the officials. That's the end of your personality. The name bars are coming off. I would like to see that back on in order to humanize the officials.
League had its annual address during the playoffs from the commissioner and deputy commissioner yesterday. Who's the next commissioner? When?
So
Gary decides to retire.
Yes, exactly. The reports of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. Pulled the Mark Twain
great
out.
Quote.
Pulled the Mark Twain out. I really enjoyed that one. My question is, will it be a commissioner or will it be an interim commissioner? Like I do. I think we all look at Bill Daly and say, like, Bill's been Gary's right-hand man forever. But I'm pretty sure that the NHL, like all leagues, they want their Roger Goodell. Mm-hmm. Like, they want their guy who's there for the long haul and for decades upon decades. And I'm not sure that that's Bill. Bill's already been with the NHL for a number of decades. So I wonder if it's an interim commissioner until their Roger Goodell is found. Can I tell you my theory? I got a theory. Not necessarily on who it is, but what the commissioner right now, Gary Bettman, is doing. So my theory on this, and again, yesterday he was defending the playoff format. Mm-hmm. As everybody screams and howls for 1v8, he's not buying it. He's not going along with it. This is fine.
I'll scream for 20 teams in the playoffs and not just 16, but that's just my own personal.
No, it's been 16 for, it used to be a 21, we all remember, it was a 21-team league, and there were 16 teams that made it.
Yep.
But, so my theory is that whomever the next commissioner, be it interim or full-time, what he is doing, and maybe it is Bill Daly, what he's doing is setting up some easy early wins for that commissioner. That one of the first moves, whomever the next commissioner is, all right, first move, 1v8, right on, new commissioner. This is, like, don't forget.
Miking up officials live in game.
Yeah! Who knows? Like, honestly, like a lot of, like, Gary just doesn't think in the moment. He's thinking like 6 months, 1 year, 2 years.
I think you're onto something for sure.
I think he's setting up some easy wins. Mm-hmm. for whomever the next commissioner is. Otherwise, why would he really dig in his heels on this one?
Well, he's dug his heels from 93 when he became, was it 93?
93,
yeah. Yeah, when he became commissioner, and then the lockout of all, well, there was a strike, there was a lockout, there was another lockout. So he's dug in his heels in a long time. The reason why I think Bill Daley will maybe get a chance is years ago, after Bob Goodenow, and with the NHLPA and the whole Saskin thing and whatnot, I was with a lot of players that thought, who is going to lead the Players Association? And we're like thinking Bill Daley. Like, if there's a guy that can understand the business of the NHL and could lead the player to maybe, you know, have a better relationship with the NHL, would be Bill Daley. And I think that was shut down pretty quickly from the NHL and from Daley's side. So it was like, maybe there is a promise that you keep working and that will be your seat for a little bit. But you're right. Like, does it build like the legacy of somebody else taking over?
There was a while there where I thought Jerry Meehan might have been a good executive director of the Players Association. Mike Liut's name from the goalie fraternity.
Love my favorite goalie growing up.
I love that mask too. Oh man, great man, was he ever good?
Man, that was a terrible goal to Claude Lemieux in '86, though. But yes,
there was a pretty bad Canada Cup in '81, which still haunts him as well, too. I thought, you know, Mike Liut.
They should have went with Don Edwards for that one.
Oh man, remember that? Edwards and Sauvé would haunt teams for years, specifically the one down the QEW. I still think that. And I know he's quote unquote retired and, you know, just interviewed with Toronto for the general manager position, Mike Gillis.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of it is going to come down to, for, you know, executive directors or for commissioners, like, what are you looking for? Are you looking for someone with more of a business background or someone with more of a marketing background? That's sort of always been the two sort of criteria. Like, what are you trying to satisfy? Is it growth time or is it marketing time? Is it business time or is it marketing time? Are we shoveling out the barn or are we showing the horse, as Brian Burke would say? Mm-hmm. So that's those are, and I think that changes depending on the era.
Thoughts on the All-Star game format and you know, what you would do with it.
I thought
it.
The Russian inclusion was interesting with the world team. It's sort of dipping the toe as a double. I mean, the NHL has always maintained that they're going to follow the lead of the IIHF, and right now the IIHF seems to be softening their stance on Russian player/team inclusion in their event. So I thought that was interesting. I think that it's never a bad idea to wink at international hockey, considering now, finally, and you talk about, you know, lockout of 04-05, there was supposed to be a robust international schedule coming out of that.
Yep.
And it took a while, and this was always, you know, Bill Daley's portfolio to get this done. And now that there's a robust schedule and it's consistent, I don't think it's ever a bad idea to wink at that during your tentpole events, and clearly All-Star is a tentpole event. I'm not one of those guys that grouse about the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Like, I look at it, like,
I mean, I honestly just wish they would play it the way they used to, but I'm not a huge 3-on-3 guy, so it's been kind of meh.
You would rather have a shootout in the All-Star game.
Yeah, like, but I mean, I never had a problem with, like, a Kovalev or an Ovechkin, like, at some point in the third period deciding, hey, I'm going to help us win this game 10-9. Yeah. Like, it becomes super fun. But, you know, that's just me.
You know when my life got really better? My life got really better, guys, when I realized that not everything is for me. That not everything has to be programmed.
Not everything is negative.
That's exactly why I have removed myself from caring about that kind of stuff, because we've lived the experience in arena, and you see how many young families from across the hockey globe come to those events, and they don't care what the format is.
No.
They are there to represent every single team and their fandom. It's amazing when you're actually in it and not just looking at it from a ridiculous, you know, kind of down your nose position.
You look at the kids that go to these events and see all the stars in one place. I've taken my kids when the All-Star was in Toronto, and their eyes were big as saucers.
Yeah.
They could not tell you one thing about the game other than, I saw all these star players.
Exactly.
All in one place, and it's never a bad idea to say thank you to the sponsors, the people that have the nerve to keep the lights on.
Yeah, a lot of money involved.
Every year it rolls around, and the same chorus kind of gets out there and gripes about the All-Star. Oh, this is ridiculous, and the games are no good. Blah, 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 blah. It's not for you. It's not for you.
It's not for you.
Not everything has to be for you. Mm-hmm. Drop the arrogance. Like, it doesn't have to be
just
for you.
Read a book for the weekend or something. Exactly.
No one's forcing you to watch, like, Clockwork Orange with, like, toothpicks propping your eyeballs. Like, no one's forcing you to watch this thing. Leave it alone.
The Combine is here this weekend. So obviously, you're here and you do a lot of prospect work.
Yeah.
So what excites you about, like, well, first of all, we've had the Combine here in Buffalo for
it's
a while now.
Here.
So it works. Stay. But what excites you for the draft class this year?
Great question. If you want a defenseman, this is your year to get it. And there's a lot of elite level D. It's not a year where you're going to get, and we'll see, but not a year where you're going to get, like, you know, your franchise leading player for the next 15 years. This isn't, there's no, you know, Bedard, McDavid, like, there's not these types of Matthew Schaefer, these types of
not
players
even McKenna?
Here. I don't think so. Listen, I know the comparisons are, you know, will he be, you know, Pat Kane light? Will he be Pasternak light? Will he be Nikita Kucherov light? Maybe. If so, that probably hasn't emerged yet. Again, like, I always remind people, like, the drafting is just one piece of it. Right? Like, that's just one piece. We tend to forget, like, the development.
Yeah.
And I know managers always look at this and say, like, you know, the identifying process is just one part of this thing. We always forget about the development piece. And I'm sure you've seen it, guys that have lit it up when they're like 16, 17 years old. Yeah. And they get to the NHL and they get with an organization where the development piece just isn't there. And that's it for the career. And you say, whatever happened to that guy? What a bad pick. No, it was a good pick. The problem was the follow-up wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I tend not to put too much stock in who's selected where, because the big piece is coming now, and that's a development piece. But it's a, listen, I still maintain the NHL does this better than any other sport. I wish it were live, like, all together, the way that it used to be. I just love the kiss mom, shake the agent's hand, hug dad, and get there and the long walk and all of that. I love it. I miss it, and I think we're all on the same page.
But last year was bad. Took forever and was bad. But
smokes.
They come into Buffalo, and we as an organization and put together with the NHL, it will be good this year. You'll enjoy it.
Quick. Let's get the stopwatch out.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that was long last year.
Move things along. It was. They were trying something new, and it was lengthy.
Were you serious about throwing Taylor Hall's name into a Hall of Fame conversation?
Yes, if he wins the Stanley Cup. Taylor Hall is one of the most fascinating players.
You're going to have an awfully long list of players.
I know.
That should be.
I get it.
Inducted long ahead of Taylor Hall, even if he were to win a cup and a Conn Smythe.
I am one of those people, though. And maybe it doesn't even need the cup to get it. Who thinks that as we look at, you know, peak performance as opposed to longevity, if you win the Hart Trophy, that should be pretty much automatic passage into the Hall of Fame, because that indicates you were the best player for.
Could have been an off year for the league.
It could have been too. But if you have a look at Hart Trophy winners. Right.
That's why I'm not trying to be disrespectful to him. I just think it was a weird year. Like,
how dominant was Taylor Hall that year with the New Jersey Devils?
Yeah,
he was incredible. And this is the best hockey we've seen Taylor Hall play since that season. So, yeah, I think it's a definite conversation if he wins the Stanley Cup. And for me, he would be my Conn Smythe guy if the Carolina Hurricanes win this thing.
But for the Hall of Fame, like I mean, you have to look at so many players now. Are you thinking the criteria need to change? Are you thinking we have to do a different thing where we maybe allow more players in the Hall of Fame, less players? What's your best way to now approach the Hall of Fame conversation?
The one thing that I add, just as a quick aside, the one thing that I do like about the Hall of Fame, what they're doing now, is they're starting to clean up positions that have been neglected, and that started with netminders.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen this, like, deliberately go about cleaning up the netminding position. There is still one position, though, where the Hall of Fame has still fallen down, and this is why, like, they put Kevin Lowe in, and that's defensive defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you can even make a case for someone like Adam Foote.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you can make a case for what do we do with Jacob Slavin,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's, like, the defensive defenseman has been woefully neglected in Hall of Fame voting, and I wonder if that starts to get cleaned up. So it's not just, you know, Kevin Lowe, Rod Langway, and Leo Boivin. And there we go. We've cleaned it up. there's our three. We got our defensive defenseman in there.
We had a question off the air yesterday, and I'm going to ask you that question.
Sure.
Eric Tolsky for GM of the year. Like, yep. He's not on the top three this year. And I had to go back and see, who decides that? There's 32.
By the way, that question was on air, not off.
Was it on air? Mm-hmm. Well, it blends. It blends because we talk about a lot of things. But yeah. So you have all 32 GMs, 5 league officials, and 5
media members.
Yeah. We were saying, like, how do you get to be those 5 media members to have that
vote?
Who are they?
I don't know. I think Pierre LeBrun might be one of them. I think Pierre is one. I don't know who the other 4 are. Hmm. But I'm with you on Tulski. Look, right now they're still riding the fumes of the second Rantanen deal and the first Rantanen deal. Like there were two. That second line is the Rantanen deal. Yep. Keandre Miller is the Rantanen deal to the Dallas Stars.
Mm-hmm. Nick Ehlers to a certain extent because you spent your money elsewhere and you saved it for Nick Ehlers.
And you offered, like, because they came down to Carolina and Washington, and Carolina offered the extra year. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And that's what got it done. Mm-hmm. So on Tulski, if I told you there was a team that let go of Brett Pesce, and Brady Shea, and Brent Burns, and Dmitry Orlov, and Dougie Hamilton, you'd probably say, wow, their defense must stink.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Look
isn't
at
it?
What he's done.
Yeah.
Look at what he's done with that. Now,
if Nikishin pans out, like we're all like, oh my gosh, if this, like, yeah, it's.
He could be special too, but like he's completely reconstructed that back end. Now, a lot of this has to go credit to Tim Gleason, who handles the blue line.
Yes.
So credit to Tim Gleason with the Carolina Hurricanes because. Everyone, you know, Pierre McGuire was on with me the other day making the point, everybody in Carolina gets better. Mm-hmm. Like, how many teams can you say that about? But everybody gets better in Carolina. And that back end, led by Jacob Slavin, how great does Keandre Miller look?
Yeah.
Rangers fans are pulling their hair out looking at how great Keandre Miller's playing. Mm-hmm. But everybody on that back end, he's completely redundant. And he doesn't have what I like about Tulski is he doesn't have an ego that says, well, I made the Rantanen trade and damn it, I'm digging my heels in and he's going to play for the Carolina Hurricanes. Mm-hmm. He realized that it wasn't a fit and the player didn't want to be there and he went about making the best possible move. How many other managers would swallow their ego in season and make that deal? And what else I like about Tulski is he's not afraid to actually do GM work. He's not afraid to let players go because he looks at it as a challenge to find that replacement. Mm-hmm. That's the actual GM work. Like, there's the number. They're not comfortable. We're going to let this player go. We just went down the laundry list of defensemen. And he accepts and embraces the challenge of finding those replacements.
Danny Briere was in your chair yesterday and said something really interesting to that effect, too, because everybody's like, oh, there's not going to be much happening in free agency. And he goes, there's always players available.
Bingo.
And I loved the way he said that. Next time you're back, we're going to talk wrestling and your Sabres early origins fandom. And
Can I talk about Ted Darling, please?
Exactly,
my favorite topic.
Yes. We'll do a whole segment. We got a whole summer ahead. Thanks, Jeff.
Can I talk about the Earl of Bud, too? Can I go back to the
course,
odd days?
All right. You can do it all. Let's because it. He always has. He's Jeff Merrick, host of Daily Faceoff. We'll continue Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Precious little time remaining. That can only mean one thing. Dazzled and Disturbed. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Dazzled and
Disturbed.
Okay, this isn't fair. It wasn't long ago we were showing Joe Adele with Highway Robbery of 3 home runs in a game, and this one goes the other way. Off his head, over the wall, home run Colorado.
It's not as bad as Jose Canseco years ago.
They're all bad, aren't they?
They're pretty bad, and it just cleared the wall, right? He thinks he's got a catch, goes off his glove, his head, just over the yellow line. It is a home run. That was pretty disturbing.
I hate sports.
It's awesome.
Its checks and balances.
Yes. We will make sure on this show, if you're disturbed, you're going to get dazzled and vice versa.
Now, what was Bridgewater Police doing?
So they got a call about a man in camo gear walking around a neighborhood with a bazooka. And then they went to the spot. It was a landscaper with a leaf blower. Can you imagine that? Like I'm around with a leaf blower all the time. Like, the neighbors calling in. There's a man with a bazooka outside. You got to get here. 20, 30 cars show up to, like, thinking there's going to be a standoff with a bazooka guy, and it's a leaf blower and it's a landscaper.
Bit of a leaf blower over
I know
here.
Exactly. You leaves.
Do you have a French Open update you wanted to
you
share?
You know what? The top seeds are all crumbling. Aryna Sabalenka lost today in three sets. She was up 4-1 in the second. Looked to close, lost 6-love in the third, and now Felix Auger-Aliassime, Canadians, won the first set. He's the fourth seed for the men's side. He's down 2-1 in sets right now.
Like leaves blowing in the wind, these seeds at the French Open.
Yes,
happy birthday,
are.
Doug Huda, 60. Today.
I love Hoods. He's one of the greatest. Love him.
Well, we love Darren Dreger, and that's why he's coming back for his regular slot tomorrow on Sabres Live. We'll see you then.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.